the waste dries to a clear sheen? He asked Kestrel. How do you think the battle will go?
Arryn answered instead.
For them and us, it will be the kind of battle where a general puts his soldiers in such a desperate situation that the fear of death and difficulty of retreat push them to fight their utmost, because there is no other choice.
Roshar coolly lifted one brow. He looked ready to say that Arryn was being needlessly dramatic. But Kestrel nodded. The alarm came at noon. There was a faint drizzle. The sun was somewhere, but couldn't be seen. Off to the east was a solid ridge of gray cloud, and at sea, a faint pale line of sails. Gunners flanked the beach. The Dokran Harani army waited in a wedge formation, the cavalry spearheading the bristling mass of people. Kestrel's face was taut, her hands white-knuckled on the reins. Javelin lifted and dropped one hoof, a muffled thud. There were flat, open Valorian boats on the water, thousands of them, heavy with horses and cannon. They rowed from the anchored ships, oars lifted and dipped in the rain. Arryn couldn't hear the Valorian command. The sound of it was lost over the sea. But he saw when Valorian soldiers began to prime the cannons. He could practically smell the black powder. For a moment, he wasn't on his horse with a sword in hand, but on an unsteady boat, palms gritty with powder, hands ramming the charge home. They'd fire even before they reached the shore. A plea rose within him, surging hard as if unexpected, although if he'd examined himself more thoroughly earlier, he would have known all along what he'd beg in this final moment, despite his promise to trust her. Arryn touched her shoulder. She startled, keyed to an extremity he knew very well.
"Change your mind," he said. "Turn back. Go to the bluffs, please."
"No." Finally, he felt the fear that infected everyone else.
"Then stay close to me."
Whatever she said in reply was lost as the first explosion split and broke the world. 32. He didn't see where the first cannonball hit, but he heard the sick thud and felt the impact jutter up from the beach into his boots. The shriek of horses, human cries, deep into the left flank. Roshar's army returned fire, mostly missing, because it was harder to hit moving targets on the waves. Geysers sprayed where cannonballs hit the water. One speeding iron ball punched into a boat and splintered it. Horses and men slid into the sea. Black smoke plumed across the beach. The first Valorian boat snudged up onto the shore. Soldiers dropped into the water, knee-deep. Horses were led down ramps. Cannons would soon follow.
"Shatter them all," Roshar ordered.
His gunners riddled the first wave of Valorians. But there was a second wave, and a third. And finally a Valorian cannon was maneuvered into position to blast one flank of gunners into a bloody, smoking, screaming heap. Arryn's horse reared. He wrestled it down, pressing his weight into his seat. He held the horse between his tight knees, preferring that than to tug at the bit, and he was distracted. Everything was loud. Even after he calmed his horse, he no longer trusted it to obey him. Then came a little sound he shouldn't have been able to hear, a dry swallow. He glanced at Kestrel. Javelin, magnificent warhorse, steady beast, was stock still. So was she, but her skin stretched thinly across her cheekbones. Her eyes were too large and pale.
"Please," Arryn prayed. "Give her your mercy."
His god was amused.
"If she doesn't believe in me, how can I believe in her?"
The general had landed. Arryn could see him. He saw Kestrel see him. Several columns of Valorians pushed up from the shore onto the beach. Roshar ordered his vanguard forward. Death bit the nape of Arryn's neck, where a cat bites her kitten.
"Maybe," Death murmured. "I'll show her the same kind of mercy I'll show you."
Arryn's heart thumped. His blood rushed. He put a free hand to his stinging skin and drew it away, expecting blood. Nothing. A push of damp wind at his back. The trembling of the horse beneath him. A cannon boomed. The animal screamed, reared again. It plunged forward, through the lines of the vanguard, right into the oncoming Valorians. She couldn't see Aaron. She couldn't see him, and it felt as if she couldn't see anything at all. The cannons held their breath. Vanguard crashed into vanguard. She saw the collision happen a few ranks ahead. The spurt of blood. Hideous masks of fear and hatred. An arm shorn from the shoulder. Bodies shoved from horses, crumpled into the sand beneath hooves. And the cruelty of what she couldn't see. Where was he? Javelin hadn't moved. He was stone, which made her realize that she was, too. One hand clutched a sword, as if she could squeeze the hilt into non-existence. A sword. Her with a sword. She had no skill for it. Terror snaked through her, slipping and winding. The Valorians hadn't yet broken through the front lines. Artillery couldn't be used, for fear of hitting one's own. There were a few brief moments before an enemy reached her. And maybe ahead, somewhere, was what she realized she feared most of all. Aaron's emptied eyes, his blood spilling, spent. She kneed Javelin forward and rode up through the ranks. He was nearly thrown from his horse. A Valorian slammed into him. Aaron caught a blow to his armored chest, sucked in a sharp breath. Felt the bruise, maybe a fracture. No blood, he thought. For the smallest of moments it was hard to focus. Hard even to know what his hands were doing or what he saw and whom he fought. He asked his god a formless question. If he could have put it into words, he would have asked if the god's mercy was to have let him live for so long. 20 years is better than 9. Or was the god's mercy to die this way, and not a different, worse way? Or simply to come home to the haven of the gods, mother, father, sister? A wash of loneliness, of longing, of yes. Yes, maybe that was it. Maybe that was what the god had meant. Mercy. A promise that the final moment before this world became the next one would be as sweet as love. But he could not think this or understand it. He simply felt it. This question that was many questions condensed into an iron bead, the head of a pin, a tiny hard point of dread and hope and relief. His horse. His damned horse. The animal kept straining its will against Aaron's. This horse was going to get him killed. Aaron tried to feel worried. His sword opened someone's belly. He wasn't sure how. His blade shouldn't have gotten past Valorian armor. But entrails probed out of a gash. A slow, wet unfolding. Aaron ended it. To come home, mused his god, who had been able to take the iron bead of Aaron's heart and make it a feather, and could separate each barb from the other all along down the quill. The god ran a finger down the unnaturally fanned vein.
Is that what you think I meant by mercy? Is that what you want? Well, Aaron, well.
Kestrel didn't understand why no one attacked her. Then she did, and felt stupid and grateful. Her armor, her Valorian looks. Rashar's forces knew her, knew her horse. But to the Valorians, she seemed to be one of their own. Oddly positioned, if they thought about it, but no one thought. They gurgled from cut throats. They drove swords so far into bodies that their fists vanished inside someone else's flesh. She moved Javelin among them. Valorian, Dacron, Harani, little ghost. Yes, she didn't exist. Even when someone's blood sprayed her cheek, it didn't feel real. No one touched her. Until she saw Rashar hack a sword from someone's grip, smash his shield into the Valorian's nose, and slice in at the neck. The prince kneed his horse out of the path of the body's fall. He wheeled his horse and saw Kestrel.
"Where's Aaron?" he shouted.
Kestrel's voice didn't work. "I don't know," she finally said, the whisper hoarse. Roshar wouldn't have been able to hear, even if he weren't several feet away. But a nearby Valorian heard. He'd seen the look between her and the prince, had heard them speak the Dacron tongue. A cavalry officer. He shouldered his horse into hers, reached, grabbed her throat.
"A scout!"
His dark eyes were narrow, his teeth bared.
In the vanguard. Name your regiment.
She gasped.
Traitor!
He knocked the sword from her limp hand.
Kestrel!
Rashar. Too far away. She strained to breathe. She didn't break his gaze. Whispering something she knew he couldn't hear, she watched the Valorian lean forward, loosen his grip just slightly. Kestrel reached for her dagger and drove it into his armpit. He grunted, let go. She jerked her dagger free and pierced his throat. His weight sagged against her. He was gasping in her ear, the sound sticky and wet, blood gushing onto her as she tried to keep her seat, tried to push the armored officer away. But his horse balked. The Valorian gripped her, his brown eyes staring, vengeful, fading. With the last of his strength, he dragged her down with him. He pulled her from her horse. Arryn's horse was bad, but it'd be much worse to be without one. He cut a space around him. The frontier between army and army was dissolving. Kestrel must be several ranks behind him. The Valorians would soon reach her.
Stay close,
he'd said. His anxiety rose, making him vicious. Some part of him stared at what his hands and body did, but the larger part of him grew yet larger and took satisfaction. There was pleasure and murder, along with worry, at his pleasure. Running through all of it, a sheer stream of fear.
Stay close!
He turned his horse back. And if he couldn't find her? Farther back. Still farther. The Valorians had already eaten their way into the rank where she and Javelin had been. His lungs squeezed shut.
Where?
He demanded.
The general?
His god coyly answered.
Allow me to point you the way.
Arryn's nerves screamed.
Open your eyes,
Death said.
Look, my love, and see.
Arryn did. He saw, not far away, Javelin standing amid the boil of war. His rider was gone. Kestrel's cheek was in the sand. Her mouth was full of it. She coughed and spat, her back and shoulders sinking into the beach and pushed at the dead body heaped onto her. She tried to lever it off. Her arms gave out. She saw the misting sky, her horse close. She pushed again at the officer. His armor made him heavier. She was soaked with his blood. She felt it still pumping, heard the chaos around her. Panic stitched down her spine. She shoved. The body didn't budge. She tried harder, felt the weight press her chest. Finally, she screamed. Something slammed into Arryn. He kept his seat, wheeled to see his attacker, saw the Valorian's grin, and then, too late, the serrated steel along the length of the man's boot. Arryn noticed it, right before the Valorian used his foot like a knife and slashed the exposed ribs of Arryn's horse. The animal's cry pierced Arryn's ears. He was pitched to the ground.
In war, her father sometimes said, you might live, you might die. But if you panic, death is the only outcome.
She hated him for his coolness, his rules. But the body crushed her. But the sand. She tried to see if she could turn onto her belly. Wriggling, she shifted beneath the body. As she strained to turn, she waited for someone to notice her and attack. She waited for hooves to crush her skull. But Javelin stood solidly, right where he'd been the moment she'd fallen. Cavalry maneuvered around the harmless horse. No one was looking at the ground. Worming into the sand, she flipped onto her front and began to dig, sweeping the sand away from her as if swimming. She dug her elbows into the trough she'd made and pulled. She slipped free. Arryn scrambled to his feet, dodged, just in time, the kick of the serrated boot to his head. With both hands, where was his sword? He seized the Valorian's ankle and hauled the man off his horse. Kestrel's shaking hands sifted through the sand for her dagger. Her dagger. She must find it. She could not lose it. When she found the ridge of it beneath a veil of red sand, tears pricked her eyes. She seized its hilt. Javelin was steady, waiting for her. She wanted to lean against him and press her face into his hide.
She wanted to become a horse so that she could thank him in a way he would understand. She went to mount him, then saw, over the rise of her saddle, Arryn. From the beach, Arryn snatched a sword. His? Didn't matter, and was already swiping it down through the air toward the fallen Valorian's neck, when the man surged to his feet, struck Arryn's blade aside with his own, and drove its point toward Arryn. Arryn countered, heard the skittering of steel against steel, and felt the vibration, the pressure. He felt the pressure give. The man's blade sank for an instant. But it was a trick. In that moment of seeming weakness, the Valorian's other hand went for his dagger, which he stabbed into a gap where Arryn's armor joined. Kestrel was stumbling forward on the sand, her legs too sluggish. She couldn't move fast enough. The Valorian's back was to her. She could see Arryn's face, the crease between his brows, the inward quality of his expression. And then something shifting, a flare, a recognition. The Valorian stabbed. Arryn cried out. The dagger bit into his ribs. Pain laced up his side. He struck back, sword dancing harmlessly down the Valorian's armor, doing no more damage than to cut the laces of the man's right boot.
"You're mine," said the Valorian,
which was what death always said. Arryn, surprised to hear the god's words come from a human mouth, faltered. He felt strange. He thought, "Ah," he thought, "grateful." He welcomed the god's warning, realized that he'd always wanted to know before it happened. He wouldn't want to blink too suddenly out of this life. But he loved this life. He loved the girl in it. His heart punched hard, rebelled. Too late. The base of the Valorian's blade was coming at his head, angled for his neck. Arryn tried to duck. The hilt slammed into his temple. Darkness bled across his vision. He couldn't feel his legs. He tried to hear his god, but he heard only silence, and then he heard nothing at all. 33. She saw Arryn go down. She skidded in the sand as she ran, her ears roaring. Her mind closed over, a shaking dread. A few paces away, her dagger was tight in her hand. The Valorian's back was an armored wall. The man raised his sword again. He didn't hear her come at him. But where? Where? She had a dagger, but there was nowhere to stab. Not the back of the neck, which she couldn't reach. Not the torso or even the legs. He was armored from shoulders to boots.
"A dagger wants flesh," her father would say. "Find it."
A great pressure in her chest. Desperation as she came up behind. She didn't know what to do, couldn't think, and then it was as if someone else noticed the looseness at the top of one of the man's boots and dropped her to her knees in the sand. She seized the boot's top, yanked it back, and slashed the ropey tendon at the ankle. He screamed. She seemed to feel him feel the excruciating pain of the cut tendon curling up into his calf. His collapse. The pumping agony. How a girl climbed onto him, feral, fox-like. But a girl? But her hair, her skin, her eyes, her armor. Not the enemy. The enemy? Then the dagger found his throat, and he knew exactly what she was. Her hand, her arm, bright red. She couldn't let go of the dagger. She made herself sheathe it. She needed her hands. She needed Arryn. The sprawl of him. She was weeping, crouched in the sand, empty fingers wild when she reached him, searched him, found the dagger in his side, his blackened brow, purple cheek, split skin. She touched his face and felt his head loll. A pulse? Or just her own pulse? Her body vibrated with it. She couldn't keep her fingers steady against the hollow under his jaw. She made herself look again at the dagger in his side, and unbuckled the armor to see better. Only the tip of the dagger had entered the flesh. It was stuck between the ribs. Her sudden hope was savage. She didn't want to pull the dagger out. She had nothing to stanch a flow of blood, and returned her attention to Arryn's head. This time, when her fingers went for his pulse, she found it and knew it to be his. Her tears flowed fresh. The wound in his side was minor, yet a blow to the head can do anything. Can kill, paralyze, take away his senses, his mind. It could make him sleep forever. Arin, wake up! Once the words came, they didn't stop. We have to move. We can't stay here. Please, please wake up. I love you. Don't leave me. Wake up! Listen to me. Arin, listen! Someone was weeping. Her tears fell warm on his brow, his lashes, his mouth. Don't cry, he tried to say. Please listen, she said. He would. Of course he would. How could she think that he wouldn't? This felt familiar, unreal. He had the sense that this had happened before, or would happen, that this was either an echo or its source. If he opened his eyes, the world would double. His skull throbbed. Stones weighted his eyes. He was covered with earth, thick and loamy and loose. A comfort. It eased the nauseating ache. Yet there were no stones, no earth. A part of him knew this, the same part that clung to the woman's voice. Her voice was breaking apart. He heard it turn horrible. Soon, he realized, she would scream. Don't, he managed, and opened his eyes and was sick. He wondered at it, faintly, her expression, that mix of anguish and relief. Her hands were wholly still for a moment, then instantly busy, lifting a canteen of water to his mouth, trying to worm under his weight and lift. Too heavy. I'm sorry, she said. Arin, you must get up.
I don't think I can.
Yes, just to Javelin. Come on. She was tugging at him, shoulders, arms. He didn't have the heart to tell her to stop, that the ache in his head was monstrous, that every jostle hurt. He tried to focus, and saw Javelin standing nearby, saw the undulating crush of soldiers and metal. Fear entered him. This little piece that sheltered him and Kestrel couldn't last long. Impossible, that no one had noticed them, that no one had already brought a sword slicing through her neck as she knelt beside him, and pulled and begged.
Go,
he told her. She recoiled. No!
It's all right.
He tried to touch her cheek, but either his vision was wrong or his hand was. He fumbled, touched her nose and lips.
I don't mind.
Don't say that.
Ride fast. Far.
Don't ask me that. You wouldn't do that. You would never leave me. But it's different, he tried to say. Then became lost in what he wanted to explain, that this, her, what, sorrow, was dear to him, unexpected. So hard to heave words into his mouth. He realized his hand had fallen. Her face screwed into an expression he couldn't read. Get up, she said through her teeth.
Please, go.
She curled fingers over the rim of his leather breastplate and gripped it. Make me. This time Arin recognized her expression, determination. He closed his eyes so that he wouldn't see. You don't owe me anything, he would have said. You'll lose no honor if you leave. Arin wondered if she knew the way her whole being could become a vow. He would say, tell me why you can't leave. Maybe, if his head were clearer, he would know why without asking. For now, he saw only her determination and its danger. Was this his god's version of mercy, that she would die on this beach with him? Unbearable. Through the thump of his head, he discovered a different pain, traveled down it, his side, his ribs, a dagger. He pulled it out. She made an appalled cry. His side became sticky. He dug the dagger into the sand and gripped her shoulder with his other hand. Felt his head split. Arin pushed himself up, levering off the dagger. He tried to distance himself from what he was doing, from the spasm that racked his body as he was sick again. On his knees, sky dark, rain. Kestrel's shoulder, frail seeming in his hand. Not able to bear his weight, surely, but she did. She strained to get him to his feet. Each stumble hurt, and he dreaded how it would be to mount Javelin and ride. But he would. He did, and she was with him. Eventually, he couldn't tell if the sky was raining and dark, or if his mind was. Everything was black and wet. As the horse moved beneath them, a quiet grew through the pain. A feeling floated over him, like sillage from a rare perfume. He seemed to hear the tinkle of a glass stopper lifted from a tiny flacon. The release of scent. How was it possible to smell flowers that weren't there? Aaron became aware that his thoughts were hard to hold. They vanished into smoke. It didn't matter. He let them go. Smoke, perfume, rain. All lovely, unlasting. The same, maybe, as whatever had made Kestrel swear that she wouldn't leave him. He wasn't sure what had made her do that, but it had been something. It had been real. This he wouldn't relinquish. This he would hold and remember. He saw Kestrel's hands on the reins. He felt his body slacken. Hoofbeats hammered his skull. Someone, deep voice, swore.
You tied him to you.
He nearly fell, he heard Kestrel say. Aaron opened his eyes. Rashar was untying the rope that bound him to Kestrel, the prince's gaze fixed on the knots. It wasn't like Rashar not to look at him.
Well, that was stupid, the prince told her. Didn't you consider that if he truly started to fall, his weight would drag you off, too?
She was silent. She had considered this. Aaron could tell from her silence. Roshar's arm went around Aaron's waist.
Come on, he said.
Aaron sort of slid down from the horse and was steadied and held.
You're bleeding on me, Rashar complained.
Yes, Aaron supposed that he was bleeding. But his head, the ache was worse than anything. Aaron let himself sag against Rashar, dropped his brow to the man's shoulder. Then he made himself open his eyes again. Kestrel stood to the side, arms tightly held to her chest. Beyond her lay an army encampment, hastily thrown together, smaller than before.
What happened? Aaron asked. A bloodbath, Rashar said. We retreated. They seized the beach. I blame you.
Kestrel sucked in a furious breath.
He doesn't mean that, Aaron muttered. Are you going to make me carry you? Rashar said.
Kestrel said something sharp. It wasn't that Aaron didn't hear the words. He was just too weary to absorb them. He heard Rashar's slow, drawling tones, Kestrel's hiss. Aaron wanted to tell her, he's hiding from you. He wanted to say, he's worried. Aaron was suddenly overwhelmed by their worry, by how everything was so unspoken. He stepped away from Rashar's supporting arm and began to walk with no real destination in mind. Rashar called him a filthy name, caught him before he fell.
Bone and blood and breath of the goddess, Rashar said. What were you trying to prove?
Aaron was on his back in Rashar's bed, in his tent. The prince stood next to his bedside, posture taut and jumpy. A heavy warmth rested on Aaron's chest. Kestrel, her head pillowed against him as she slept, knelt on the ground, her upper body loosely draped over the bed's edge. His armor and tunic were gone. His ribs were bandaged. Her palm lay on his belly.
I would have carried you, Rashar said more quietly. I know.
Aaron's voice woke her. She lifted her head, moved away. Her mouth was thin, her eyes smudged with shadows, braid half undone.
The war, Aaron asked.
Kestrel and Rashar exchanged a glance.
That bad?
Rest, Aaron, Kestrel said. Rashar clicked his teeth.
Not too much. He keeps drifting in and out. Not good for a head injury like that. Keep him awake. Don't let him sleep.
To Aaron, he said.
I can't stay. I have to organize the retreat to the city.
Aaron's stomach lurched. Retreat to the city was a last resort.
Don't!
He scrounged for a better idea. Kestrel looked silent and grim. Rashar said,
I want to stay with you. I can't.
Aaron lifted his palm to his friend's cheek. This startled the prince. Aaron saw him remember the Harani gesture, yet hesitate before returning it. It made Aaron sad. His hand fell. He He traced a carving in the cot's frame, feeling awkward to have displaced Rashar from his bed.
Where will you sleep?
Have no fear. Many a bed would welcome me.
After the prince left, Arryn asked Kestrel,
why did the battle go so badly?
The question upset her.
That's what she wants to know.
It's important.
More important than how you nearly died.
But I didn't.
Her voice was clipped.
My father has too much black powder, too many soldiers, too much experience.
But how exactly did he win?
A full frontal attack was enough, once he eliminated the guns. I didn't see everything that happened.
Guilt pulsed with a doubled heartbeat in his head.
Because you rode away with me.
Her eyes welled.
I'm sorry, he said. Talk of something else, what you like.
She opened her mouth, closed it. Her voice hushed, she said. Do you remember the mosaic?
Yes.
How everything fit, as if each tile wanted to be next to each other.
Yes.
But he was confused. He wasn't sure what the mosaic meant to her, or why she thought of it now. She talked about it, as if trying to explain that left was really right, or that it was both left and right, which made him realize that he knew that left and right were important, but he couldn't grasp their meaning or difference. He closed his eyes.
Arryn, don't.
Only for a little.
No,
she gripped his hand.
Shh.
Stories, she blurted. The mosaic told stories, didn't it?
Yes, old ones.
I'll tell them to you.
His eyes cracked open. He didn't remember closing them.
You know those tales?
Yes.
She didn't. This became clear as she began to tell them. She knew bits and pieces, cobbled together in ways that would have made him smile if smiling didn't hurt.
You, he breathed, are such a faker.
Don't interrupt.
Mostly pure invention. She remembered the images. It pleased him how vividly she knew the temple floor's details, which god curled around which, or how the snake's tongue forked into three. But the stories she told had little to do with his religion. Sometimes they didn't even make sense.
Do this again, he said, when I have strength to laugh.
As bad as that?
Maybe not, for a Valorian.
But eventually everything grew slow, unthreaded. He thought of raw cotton pulled apart, fibers trailing. Maybe Kestrel had talked for hours. He didn't know. When had she rested her cheek against his heart again? His chest rose and fell.
Arryn.
I know. I shouldn't sleep. But I'm so tired.
She threatened him. He didn't hear the whole of it.
Lie with me, he murmured.
It bothered him to think of her kneeling on the ground.
Promise not to sleep.
I promise.
But he didn't mean it. He knew what would happen. She slipped in beside him. Everything became too soft, too dark, too velvet. He sank into sleep. He sighed and let go. 34. When she woke, he was gone. Kestrel's heart crashed against her ribs and didn't let up, not even when she pushed her way out of the tent and found Arryn making tea under the hollowed blue of a near-dawn sky. He stoked the little fire.
What do you think you're doing? She demanded.
I found a box of tea in the tent.
Arryn saw her expression.
Rashar won't mind.
I mind.
His gaze traveled between her and the pot of boiling water.
What's wrong?
You shouldn't have slept.
I'm better for it.
Maybe. But it hurt her to see his face, the inky bruise that spread over his brow and cheek and into the corner of his eye, the broken skin where he'd been struck at his temple. He wore a dirty tunic, perhaps because he didn't want to soil a clean one. Dried blood flaked the skin of his bare arms. An awful bubble expanded inside her chest.
I shouldn't have slept.
You needed to. The battle, the ride, it can't have been easy.
No, it wasn't.
Arryn turned the closed teabox in his hands. The dry leaves whispered.
Thank you for saving me.
I thought you were dead. that she would die. He considered the box.
I know how hard it is to watch someone die.
Not someone. You, Arin. He nodded, but winced, set the box aside, and didn't seem to truly hear her. She sank to sit by the fire, her crooked arm resting on a bent knee drawn to her chest. She pressed her mouth and chin against her inner arm. You're still in pain.
Not so much anymore, which is why you must talk to me.
Arin, I am.
About the war.
She looked at him. He said,
We can't retreat to the city.
We can't face them in open battle, not the entire Valorian force. Lerilyn proved that.
Inviting them to lay siege to the city is no answer. I already tried once to hold the city against the general. He made short work of its defenses. He breached the wall.
It's repaired. This time you have the East as an ally.
If you weren't trying to protect me right now with false optimism, what would you really say?
The sky had lightened. She heard the camp begin to stir.
Be honest, Kestrel.
About the war. Her voice was flat. His expression shifted slightly. He set his thumb against his jaw, fanning dirty fingers over his scarred cheek.
Is there something else?
His fatigue, his bruises, the pain he was trying to hide, the way her heart had grown scales, but inside, hot as a live coal. He said,
We both know what will happen if we retreat to the city.
So she said it. The East might look at its losses, see a likely defeat, and leave, even if Roshar wants to stay.
And then it's over.
Arin's gray eyes were naked.
I can't lose. There'll be nothing left for me if I do.
That's not true. But he had stood. The camp was awake. His small fire had gone out. The tea, forgotten, had cooled. She kept her head bowed. We must retreat inland, until I think of something better. Arin stepped close to her, his footfalls hushed by the pale, sandy earth with its wisps of grass. He touched the nape of her neck, fingertips brushing down to the first bones of her back. He gently hooked the collar of her shirt. Her skin sang so loud that she couldn't think of any words, let alone the right ones, and by the time she knew that she should, that it was now, that it wouldn't hurt to say what she felt, that she could give her love to someone without being broken for it. Arin had already gone. Roshar had a litter brought to Arin, who glanced at it and the men assigned to carry it.
No, said Arin. Idiot, the prince sneered. You were knocked unconscious. You look like hell. Get in the litter. I'll go in a cart, Arin said, referring to wagons that carried the wounded. I don't need special treatment. Oh, yes, you do.
Kestrel had never seen Roshar so angry.
Why?
Arin squinted at him.
Because of your concern, or because you want to send a message to the army?
Kestrel could think of two messages, to show the Dacrans that the supposedly god-touched Harani leader was weak, or to show the Harani that the Eastern Prince valued Arin. Maybe both. Roshar's mouth twitched into an unhappy smile.
Then I'll ride, Arin said.
When the day ended and the army set camp on a low hill whose bushes bore thick, oily green leaves, Roshar stood near his tent as an officer set it up. The prince's fingers drummed the muscles of his crossed arms. Kestrel didn't know where Arin was. She thought he'd gone to water his new horse at a stream near camp. But when Roshar's tent was up and the sun down and Arin hadn't returned, an icy mist of anxiety stole over her.
He'll be more comfortable there.
Roshar jerked his chin at his tent. And you, she asked. He shrugged. Arin won't like it.
I don't care.
Then he added, the words coming in a rush.
The litter wasn't symbolic. No hidden message. Not everyone speaks in code. I just want him to be well.
Slowly, she said. I think that he is. She'd watched him during the day's ride, and although his face had grown drawn, it seemed more from weariness than pain. He'd easily kept his seat, and met her sidelong looks with a small smile. Her concern had lessened. Not entirely, though.
not enough to keep her from searching the camp after Ashar had left her by his pitched tent. Not enough to uncurl her fingers squeezed into fists after the sky's humid indigo had darkened. She returned to the tent and lit a lantern. Inside, she chafed her arms as if cold, eyeing the burning wick. She meant to measure it. After it burned down to a certain mark, she'd search for him. But the wick had barely begun to sizzle before she seized the lantern's handle, hurried toward the tent's canvas door, and smacked into Arryn as he entered. She gasped. "Where have you been?" He ran a hand through his wet hair, glanced down at his damp shirt. He smelled of soap.
"Well, a bath." "Bath makes a cold creek sound so glamorous."
"In the dark?"
"There's a moon."
"I was ready to make Rashar help me find you."
"Oh, I saw him. He directed me here, emphatically."
Arryn lifted his brows, impressed.
"The wording he used was very creative."
Kestrel became aware of how close she stood to Arryn. The lifted lamp gilded his face, illuminating the peak of the tent's apex above. It radiated a small heat between him and her. She moved away. He touched the clenched hand that held the lamp.
"Little fists, what's wrong? Both you and Rashar are angry. All I've done is get hit on the head."
"And sleep, and ride, and bathe."
"Well, I was disgusting."
Kestrel turned and strode to the table. She set the lamp down, practically slamming it. Arryn followed.
"I don't know how to prove to you that I'm all right."
She kept her back to him. Something terrible was clawing up her throat.
"I was lucky," Arryn said. "I had you, and a hard head, and the grace of my god."
"Damn your god!"
Arryn caught her arm above the elbow. She turned to face him. All trace of humor had left his face. His eyes were wide, urgent.
"Don't say that."
"Why not? I can say anything. Anything except what really matters."
"Kestrel, take it back. You'll offend him."
"Your god risks you."
"He protects me."
"You're his plaything."
"You're wrong. He loves me."
Saying those words made him look so alone. He reminded her of sails curved by the wind, full and yet empty at the same time. She found that she was jealous of his god. The sudden jealousy held her so hard in its grip that she couldn't breathe.
"It's true," Arryn insisted.
She saw then that she had hurt him, that his god's love was all the more precious to him because of his fear that he would find it nowhere else. Her anger rinsed away.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I ask your pardon. His, too."
Arryn released her, his relief plain.
"I'm not really angry at a god," she said.
"Or you." His brow creased.
"All right, yes, you, a little."
She gently thumped his chest and rested her palm flat and wide against his heart. He went very still.
"Why is it so hard for you to take care of yourself?"
He was silent. Her thumb rested in the hollow of his collarbone. She felt his pulse jolt, and her own answered. It sped. It felt like it was slipping from her grasp and that she'd never catch her heart, never pin it down, never keep it safe. She did not want to keep it safe. She said,
"Why can't you see that people care for you?"
She said,
"I care for you."
"I know that you care, but..."
He searched her face.
"Anyone would, for a friend."
"You're more than a friend."
"On the battlefield, you stayed."
"Of course I did."
"You have a strong sense of honor. You always have. I think you think you owe me something."
"I stayed because I love you."
He flinched and looked away.
"You don't mean that."
"Yes, I do."
The night outside seemed to swell against the tent. The lamp smelled like a hot stone. His face slowly opened. He touched her hand as it pressed against his heart. His caress was light, secret, almost unsure of her knuckles, the thin tendons as strong as bone. She felt him become sure. There was no sound when he kissed her, none when she unthreaded the ties of his shirt and found his skin. He grasped her dagger belt, flexed his fingers once around the leather, then simply held on. He whispered something into her mouth that was almost a word. It lost its shape, became something else. He let go. She heard the brush of linen as he drew the shirt over his head, his fingertips grazing the tent's sloped ceiling as if for balance. His ribs were bound with gauze, his body marked by scars. Old ones, badly healed and raised. Others, pink and fresh. His shoulders bore pale gouges. They looked like sets of claws, almost deliberate, like tattoos. Curious, she touched them. He bit his lip.
That hurts?
No.
What is this? What happened?
I'll tell you, he said. Later.
His hand strayed over her shirt, which was Eastern, as Aaron's was, with no collar. Threadbare in places, frayed at the neck. He worried the cloth there, rubbing it between fingers and thumb. Then he drew her shirt open, and she felt as if reality had grown larger and tremulous, a drop of water on the point of a pin.
Kestrel, I've never...
She whispered that this was new to her, too. There was a long pause.
Are you certain you want?
Yes.
Because...
Aaron.
Maybe you...
Aaron.
She laughed, and then so did he, aware that they'd already found the bed. Words had fallen away. Maybe the words lay on the earth, nestled among clothes, curled into the undone dagger belt. Maybe later language would be recovered and pieced together, made to make sense. But not now. Now there was touch, and taste, and sound. When he eased into her, she was glad for the burning lamp, the fuzzy glow of it on his skin. The way it showed the black fall of his wet hair, the flesh and scars that made him. She didn't look away. Later, when they were quiet, he looked down at her where she lay. Stretched out alongside her, Aaron propped himself up on one elbow.
I think that I'm not awake.
His fingertips floated over her. Nose, eyelashes, messy braid, shoulder.
Beautiful,
she smiled. Like you. Aaron made a skeptical cough, scrunched his face. He found the end of her braid and paintbrushed it across her cheek.
It's true, she told him. You never believe me when I say it.
The lamp's wick fizzed and sparked in its oil. It would soon go out.
I love your eyes, she said. I have from the first.
They're common.
No, they're not.
She traced his scarred face.
This?
He shivered.
I love this.
She bit him on the jaw.
And this?
She continued to touch him.
Really?
Yes.
This, too?
Not quite a question.
That, too.
She felt laughter travel through him, and something else, quieter and more intense.
Your mouth, she said, is not bad.
Not bad?
Quite tolerable.
He cocked one brow.
I'll show you.
They stopped talking. 35. In the morning, when Rashar saw their faces, he rolled his eyes.
I want my tent back, he said.
Kestrel laughed. She loaded javelin saddlebags, listening to the sounds of the army breaking camp, clatters and thumps, someone urinating against a tree, the jingle of horse tack, the sifting grate of dirt kicked over a fire. Javelin flicked his tail. Nearby, Aaron was checking the hooves of his horse, a mare, one that took a moment for Kestrel to recognize. His previous horse had been left on the beach. This one's master was probably dead. Aaron adjusted the saddle's girth. As he ran his hands again over the horse, he said,
Why do you think we haven't been attacked yet?
She slowly buckled an open saddlebag. He said,
This isn't what I want to ask you.
He had sleepless eyes, his mouth a little swollen, the deeply tanned skin somehow burnished. Kestrel thought that she too must look like this, polished by desire, the way a river stone holds a luster from having been made so smooth.
I wish...
He caught himself, and from the way he was looking around the busy camp, She thought that Aaron had almost said that he wished there was no war, or that they could lose themselves in each other without losing everything. But this wasn't entirely true for him or for her, and she needed to win the war as much as he did. "We haven't been attacked because my father's strengthening his foothold on the beach, supplying his troops, recovering, too. It was a costly victory for them. He doesn't need to eliminate us now, when his forces will be stronger later. But he'll move soon. He'll take territory along the road all the way to the city."
"Also..." Aaron looked at her.
"Also," she said reluctantly, "he thinks he'll conquer the city with little trouble."
"We're herding ourselves into a trap."
"Yes, but..." He waited. "It buys us time," she said. "If we are retreating instead of simply seeming like we're retreating, and his scouts report this, then when we're able to find a way to counterattack, it will catch him off guard. Sometimes it's better to do instead of pretend, especially if you don't intend to follow what you're doing to the conclusion your enemy expects."
"What do you intend?"
She stroked Javelin's nose. "I'm not sure."
"Black powder is the biggest problem. If the Valorians didn't have so much of it, we'd stand a chance against them."
"Well..."
"What?"
"I could destroy it." He rubbed the back of his neck and crinkled his brow as he listened to her explain what she had in mind. He didn't like it. "You know I'll go anyway." He left his horse, dusting his hands free of the dirt from the animal's hooves. When he came close, it felt as if she'd come in out of the cold and stood next to a fire. Aaron touched the dagger at her hip and ran a thumb over the symbol on its hilt, the circle within a circle. "The God of Souls," Kestrel said. "It's his symbol."
"Hers,"
he corrected gently. Kestrel wasn't sure how long she'd known what the symbol meant. Maybe for a long time, or maybe she'd only realized it last night. It was the kind of knowledge that, once it enters you, seems like it's lived there forever. His expression was soft and entranced and puzzled.
"Do you feel changed? I feel changed."
"Yes," she whispered. He smiled.
"It's strange."
And so it was. "We could reach Lerilyn by nightfall," she said, "if we press the horses. Will you come with me?"
"Oh, Kestrel, that's something you never need to ask."
The sun was gone when they reached the wind-twisted bushes that hedged the beach. Beyond were the fires of the enemy's camp. The blue-black air smelled of smoke and salt. Kestrel cleaned her Valorian armor, strapped on a traditional-looking dagger she'd taken from the arms supply wagon, and wordlessly handed Aaron the one he'd made for her.
"I don't love my role in this particular mission," he said. "It's mostly watching you saunter into danger."
"You forget."
"That? That's nothing."
"You could get hurt." He blinked.
"No."
"You don't ever fear for yourself."
"Not for something like this."
"Then what?" He studied his hands.
"Sometimes I think of who I was. As a boy, I talk to him."
Slowly, she said. "Like you do to your god."
"It's different. Or maybe I think about him like my god thinks about me. I've made promises to the child. I worry I won't be able to keep them."
"What have you promised?"
"Revenge."
"You'll have it." Aaron nodded, but more in simple acknowledgement than actual confidence. She looked at him through the smoky night, just light enough to see his expression, and dark enough that his body smudged into the shadows. Soon, night would truly fall. Waves folded and unfolded against the shore. "We should wait for the moon to rise," she said, "before we go down to the camp."
"And what," he murmured, "will we do while we wait?"
She brought his fingers to her lips so that he could feel her smile. His hand traveled the length of her braid and toyed with the leather string that bound it. He untied the knot. The sound of it coming undone was as soft as a breath. He unraveled her hair and brought her clothes. When the moon was high, Kestrel and Aaron gathered what they needed and made their way down to the beach, keeping close to the ragged bushes, blending in with their darkness. They waited, crouched near the edge of camp, where they could see the supply wagons, their domed canvas covers as pale as mushrooms in the moonlight. Finally, a sentry on his rounds walked close to their hiding spot. In one swift movement, Aaron surged up, clamped a hand over the sentry's mouth, and dragged him down to the sand.
"Not a sound!"
Aaron hissed at the sentry, the point of his dagger pricking the hollow behind the man's ear. Aaron forced the sentry's face to turn up to the moon, eyes wide, skin strained and white.
"Tell us which wagon holds the black powder."
The sentry shook his head.
"Do you remember,"
Aaron whispered,
"the punishment for runaway slaves? No? Let me remind you."
He lightly drew his dagger over the man's ear, down the tip of his nose.
"Which wagon?"
The Valorian shook his head again, but this time his gaze jerked in the direction of one of the larger wagons. Aaron glanced at Kestrel.
"Enough?" his eyes asked.
"Yes," she mouthed, "but..."
"Don't,"
she whispered, ill at the sight of the sentry pressed down in the sand, his eyes as dark as her childhood friend's, as that of any Valorian child. They were gleaming, glassy, with the kind of fear a child eventually learns how to hide. But death will do that. It makes you unlearn all you know.
"Don't,"
she told Aaron again. He hesitated, then slammed the pommel of his dagger against the man's head, knocking him unconscious.
"Be swift," Aaron told her.
She cut into the small bag of black powder tied to her waist. She felt grit flow thinly from the hole. Then she straightened and walked into the camp. She kept her head down, her tight braid trailing over one shoulder. Her face was dirty, she reminded herself, as she passed campfires. She was changed. Her hair had reddened, was redder still by firelight. No one would recognize her, surely. Not in armor. Not like this, with no trace of cosmetics, no finery, no silk or jewels or glittering gold engagement mark. She was not herself. She was simply one of them. Just another Valorian. But her throat was dry, and her stomach shrank into a stone. The wagons weren't far off. To reassure herself, she passed her fingers through the little stream of black powder from her bag, and thought about how it traced a line between Aaron and her. When she reached the wagon the sentry had glanced at, Kestrel let out a slow breath. She peered inside and saw, in the halo of moonlight through canvas, fat mounds of sacks tied with twine.
"What are you doing?"
someone demanded. Slow, very slowly, squeezing all of her sudden fear into the sound of her boot shifting in the sand, Kestrel turned. It was a guard. The woman looked Kestrel over.
"What?"
the woman said.
"Does a scout like you want with that wagon?"
The small sack at Kestrel's waist felt light. It had leaked nearly all of its black powder. Could the guard see it in the shadows?
"I'm verifying inventory." "Why?"
The words sprang to her lips before she even fully remembered them.
"For the glory of Valoria."
The guard drew slightly back, startled to hear the phrase that indicated a military mission whose details couldn't be discussed.
"But a scout?"
She stared again at Kestrel's armor, whose color and material, leather, unlike the steel for officers, indicated her low rank. Kestrel shrugged. The empty black powder bag lay slack against her hip.
"It's not for you to question the general."
"Of course," the guard said immediately, and stepped aside as Kestrel moved to walk past her, and tried not to walk too quickly, but wanted to run all the way up into the dunes. Then it was as if a cold marble hand rested on her shoulder, pressing her down into her boot prints. There was no hand, she told herself. No one touched her.
Move!
But she couldn't, just as she couldn't help the way her gaze lifted, and saw not 15 paces away her father standing in the orange light of a fire. It cracked her open. It hatched some creature of an emotion. Two-headed, lumpy, leather wings, unnumbered limbs, a thing that should never have been born. Kestrel hadn't known, until she saw her father's face, how much she still loved him. Wrong that she felt this way. Wrong that love could live with betrayal and hurt and anger.
"Hate,"
she corrected herself.
"No,"
a voice whispered back, the voice of a small girl. Her father didn't see her. He was looking at the fire. His eyes were shadowed.